Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with your politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, boy, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005 and my accountant had gotten in cahoots, and next thing you know, my accountant died and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, "We have a problem." She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I done signed and I done stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
So like you just see
100,000, 600,000 deducted. So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22
million. Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, wow. Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was, my lawyer called me and said, "Hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. I said, "Man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here." "Oh, man." He said, "This woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor." Every tax check I had written and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man, let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they set me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. And he said, man, well, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was, if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you go into jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking, and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie, Dawson, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for two straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out the Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming, sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government. Plus, I had to pay my current taxes. I couldn't get behind on nothing. And I was living. So I was credit cards, running them up, paying them off. And finally, man, in 2012, I sold 49% of my radio company to iHeart. I got a check, man. I got me a check. And then, so I paid the government completely off to zero. And that was the first time, man, I could breathe. And then the pay-per-view, I said, let me get out of stand-up, because my wife said, Steve, you're finna be a major TV star. You're going to have to stop telling the jokes you're telling, because you're going to ruin your career. Because she saw the political correctness turning. And so she said, Steve, you can stop if you want to. I said, baby, I can't ever stop telling jokes. It's who I am. She said, well, okay, but you got to watch what you say. And all of my TV shows are sponsor-driven. The radio is sponsorship-driven. I said, man, let me get out of this, because I need time to go do more TV. And so I did one last comedy show, but I did it on pay-per-view. And little did I know, for $8, you could watch my last show. I had no idea how many people was going to tune in for that. I made a lot of money. It was the biggest single paycheck I ever made. And next thing you know, I was back.
By the time you met Blondon, how big were you getting? Like, how much were you buying on a regular basis?
Oh no, maybe a couple.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it, just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me.
That's what you're saying.
No, that's not what I have no idea.
We really need our own.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Hi, folks. In this video, I'd like to talk about how to have a home with no house payments and no monthly utility bills. You may think that's not possible, but I do it, and lots of other people do it as well. I'm going to show you how it can be done, how it can be done very inexpensively, and just kind of give you some ideas for things that you can do that society and the economic powers that be don't want you to know. So stay with me for a second and let me walk you through this. First, you need some land. This is my piece of land, which is under an acre, about 3/4 of an acre. And that's really all you need to take care of most of the needs you have and for running a small homestead. Now, I was lucky enough to get this piece of property from family. It was willed to me when my father passed away. But I have also purchased small pieces of property like this for under $400. I have an acre down in Arizona near Sholo, Arizona that I purchased for under $400. I have 5 acres near El Paso, Texas that I purchased for under $700. So it's very easy to find a piece of land if you do some looking around. eBay is a good source for finding land. Tax sales are a good source for finding land. Family members may want to sell off a piece of land. Go around looking in rural areas, and maybe you'll find a farmer that wants to split off a small piece of land and would gladly sell you one. You don't have to spend a lot of money on land, okay? This is land that doesn't have utilities run to it. It doesn't have a blacktop road that runs into it or driveway. It's rough land. That's what you start with usually if you want to buy a small piece of land that you're going to homestead on. After you have your piece of land, then you're going to have a house. You can have a big house like most people live in, and you can pay a lot of money for it and have a mortgage and be a slave to the system for another 30 years, or you can decide if you'd like to build a smaller house like mine. Paid for with cash. This is my solar cabin. The cabin cost me $2,000 to build. That does not include the doors and windows, which I salvaged off of a trailer that was being torn down. For the cabin, it cost me $2,000. It is 14 by 14. Downstairs is living area, dining area, bathroom, kitchen. Upstairs, I have a loft, bedroom, and an office. In my other videos, I take you on a complete walkthrough of this cabin, so watch those if you want to see how the cabin is as large as it is and functional on the inside. Up there on my roof, you see my solar panels. That's a 350-watt solar system that provides all of my electricity needs for lights, TVs, water pumps, all miscellaneous gadget, laptop, TV, run my vacuum, and everything else off of a 350-watt system. That 350-watt system cost me under $3,000. $2,000 for the cabin, $3,000 for the power system of solar electricity, and I use propane. I have a propane tank in the back of the cabin, and I have a propane furnace, fridge, stove, and on-demand water heater, and those cost me just about $200 for an entire year. And we have cold winters here, folks. Under $200 for an entire year for all of my propane. That is the only utility bill I have. I do not pay for electricity. I do not pay for water because I drilled my own water well. Before I drilled my own water well, though, I hauled water in. But drilling a water well on a piece of property is not that hard. You can either do it yourself or hire somebody to do it. So I have no monthly utility bills. I have a house that's completely paid for. And I have freedom. A freedom that you can't get when you're under the pressure of a mortgage and utility bills. I want you to take just a minute and think about what you could do with your life if you had no house payments and no utility bills. And I'm telling you, it is completely possible. I'm not going to go into any details of how to get out of the house that you're in. You're going to have to figure that out and talk to some professionals for some help that way. All I'm here to do is tell you it's completely possible. Now, some of you are looking at the cabin and saying, yeah, but I couldn't possibly live in anything that small. This cabin was designed specifically for additions to be built on any of three sides. As you can see, the cabin has no windows on any of the three sides. There is a window in the back door glass. The sides are 14 by 14. The cabin was built to have shed additions built on all three sides. This cabin is 400 square feet approximately inside with 200 square foot footprint. When you add on additions, you could add on an additional 400 square feet on either side and off the back, giving you anywhere from 800 to 1,200 square feet. The great thing about building a small cabin to start out with, though, is it gives you a place to live when you build on your additions, and that way you can wait and live very cheaply without any house payments or utility bills, and then when you have the money, you can build on the additions to expand the cabin. That's very good for a single person or a young couple who don't have children because you don't need a whole lot of space to start off with. This way you can save for it, build on as you want to, have the additions, have the extra room if that's what you want. Now, I live full-time in this cabin. I live by myself, but my girlfriend comes up here on the weekends, and we stay together, and let me tell you, it's perfectly comfortable. We don't feel cramped at all, and we'd much rather have a small place like this. It takes a lot less money to heat. It takes a lot less money to cool. It's a lot easier to clean. It's just a fantastic home. Now, I'm not trying to push you into building a home exactly like mine. I'm just trying to provide you with some ideas. If you wanted to come up with different ideas, a different plan, that's just fine by me. But if you are interested in learning how to build a home like mine, I do have an ebook available and a printed book available called Simple Solar Homesteading. Go to www.simplesolarhomesteading.com. You can learn how to build a cabin like mine or at least get some great ideas for building your own home. Now I want to repeat. I own my land. I have a house that I built for under $2,000. I have a solar electric system that I have for under $3,000. I use propane, which costs makes me under $200 a year. I have no house payments. I have no utility bills. If you want a life like this, it is very possible. You can stop listening to the media, and you can stop being put under society's pressures to live in the type of houses that everyone tells you you have to live in. You can live very inexpensively, and you can do this at an age, at any age, whether you're older or younger. If you're younger and you start in a place like this, imagine the amount of money that you would have to retire on, with no house payments, no utility bills, and freedom. Thank you for joining me, folks. Please watch the rest of my videos for more detailed information on each of the systems and a complete walkthrough of the cabin.
Okay. We're looking at 2025, and our primary theme from here on out, we'll talk about different topics, current events and all that. It's DIY housing, and that's what we have for the title today, DIY housing. Helping people get into homes or houses that cost $20,000 or less. And we're going to take a global home prices too. Not high end, but on the low end, the bottom of the pyramid, which that's where most people on the planet are. The pyramid is the base, the fundamentals, the foundation. Because like we talked about last week, with homes that are made out of plywood particularly, it's just really marketing. So that's our focus. And let's see, tomorrow, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, it's all Fannie Lou Hamer.
How are you maximizing the gift that God put on the inside of you?
I knew that if God ordered the meal, he was responsible for the bill. And I felt like he was going to pay for it.
If he gave you the vision, he'll provide the provision.
I had $5 left in this plan, and I hadn't even fed my family of eight. And that day, I took that $5 and turned it into $60. I took that $60, put the $5 back that I started with, and turned that into $600 by the end of the week. And that is the same money that I've been flipping for 17 years. I did it with no debt. I did it with no knowledge of the business. I did it with no experience. And for all the people who got something to say about it, I did it with no credit too. So when they say, ain't no way, there was more to the story than that.
Yeah.
Now before we hop into today's show, be sure to like, comment, and subscribe. Now let's jump into the video.
So Mignon, I didn't know this about your story. And I've known you for years now. And if I am correct, you were a teen mom. When did you have your first?
I had my first baby in 1993. And I had just graduated from high school.
Okay.
But I graduated from high school a year early. So I had gone to college early. Nobody prepared me for what the party was going to be like on an HBCU campus.
Oh, man.
So second semester, I'm bringing home a baby bumblebee.
Are you serious? What HBCU did you go to?
I went to Xavier University.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
And the shocking thing to me, and this is why I love your story, because every time we do something like this, right, something powerful comes from it, and I learn something brand new from you. And you had five kids before 25?
Yeah, I had five kids at 21.
21?
Yeah, by the time I was 21, I had five children. Three of them were a wedding present.
Okay.
And then two of them I had given birth to, and I had my sixth one at 27.
27?
Yeah.
And didn't drop out of college?
No, it just took me a little bit longer. I even took my children to school with me.
What?
Sometimes they were in class. My baby Dylan, who now runs the business, would sit in the back of my Bible class. He would never be silent. He would never sit still. But when I needed him to go to class, it's like something happened to him, and he would just color until the class was over. Man. Like, God, shut that baby's mouth so I could graduate.
Man. And today, we won't tell the people how old you are. You still look like you're about 30 years old. You know what I'm saying? But today you're running a multi-million-dollar cupcake business. And I don't think it's a cupcake business. I think that you're running a multi-million-dollar ministry. Because when people experience you and your cupcakes and your team, your staff. It's just a different experience, mm-hmm. right? And I want to talk about that because some people are experiencing you for the first time here on my show.
Mm-hmm.
And when people experience you, what do they get? I know what I get. Yeah. I get a deeper side of you. But when people experience you for the first time, what will they get? I'm curious.
I'm hoping that they get joy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's my mission in life. I want to leave everyone experiencing Mignon Francois with joy.
Yeah.
And I feel like there is such a big value for joy in heaven because in the Bible it says those who sow in tears will reap in joy. And when you think about sowing and planting,
yeah.
it takes time for a harvest to grow. And I just think that when that harvest is joy coming out of the things you've gone through, it just lets you know that everything that's happening to you
uh-huh.
is happening for you.
Yeah.
It's something that you can plant, and something is going to grow out of it. And I believe that's what my whole experience has been about.
Yeah. And so you wrote a book.
I wrote a book.
And this book, I was emotional when I read it. This is not the book. I want it to be fresh. I actually read a PDF version
mm-hmm.
that your team sent over. And it's called Made from Scratch, Finding Success Without a Recipe. And inside of this book, you talk a lot about choosing life. And really, if you just follow you, you're always promoting choose life.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean exactly? Choose life.
That's such a good question. I was being awakened at 3:17 every morning, and it was like clockwork. Like you ever saw that movie Groundhog's Day? I would turn over and see the clock. It would say 3:17. I would just awaken.
Wow.
And so I got up. I would check the house, check the stove, make sure my children were breathing.
Yeah.
And one particular day, I couldn't go back to sleep, and so I turned on the TV. And to me, the best television is either during Black History Month on TBS or fundraising time.
Right, right, right.
And there was a guy on TV. He's passed away now. His name was Wayne Dyer. He said, "The morning breeze has something to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Do not go back to sleep." And that sounded crazy to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know nothing about no morning breeze talking to me. All I'm listening for is Jesus now.
Yeah.
And so he said it a couple of times. But the third time he said it was, "God is trying to speak to you, and this is the only time you'll listen."
Mm.
And so while you think that you're getting up to check the stove and the door and stuff, you're actually getting up to spend time with God because this is the only time you're silent enough to listen.
Wow.
And so I was like, okay, well, he can stay on my TV. And I listened more. He then began to explain that it would take me a week now to get out of the bed, now that I knew that that's what I was getting up for.
Mm.
He was right. But he said, just put your feet on the floor. Eventually, you'll stand up. And that's exactly what happened. I found myself back in the same place where I had started. And underneath the table, I saw my Bible there. Because I was sitting there, okay, God, you want to talk? I don't know what you want to say. Please don't talk. Because if I hear your voice right now, I'm just going to lose it. So don't say nothing. But I do want to hear from you.
Yeah.
And so I saw my Bible and I decided to open it. And I just let it fall wherever it opened.
Mm-hmm.
It opened up to chapter 3 of a particular book. I believe it was Ephesians 3. And I started at verse 17.
Mm-hmm.
And I got my first message from God.
Mm-hmm.
And he let me know that he loved me. And he was about to show me that he had plans for me and that I needed to follow them. And so every morning I would go to chapter 3, verse 17, read through into the end of the chapter or until it didn't make any more sense,
yeah.
and then I'd go on to the next book. I read the whole Bible like that at 3:17 every morning for weeks. When God stopped awakening me on the last day, I fell into Deuteronomy.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was chapter 30. And also in Joshua. And I think that was Joshua 1. It was like the first chapter of Joshua. And God said, I'm sitting before you, life and death, blessings and curses. Choose life. And what it said to me was, I've given you a lot of businesses, Mignon. I have had so many business ideas, and you start them, and you stop them, and you don't follow through. And God said to me, I'm not giving you nothing else.
According to recent stats, only about half of African Americans have some form of estate planning put into place. This includes important documents like your wills, your trust, and your power of attorneys. Additionally, only about 60% of all people have life insurance coverage. But why is it so important for not just black people, but all of us to have these things put into place? You see, life insurance can provide financial protection for your loved ones in the event of your unexpected death. It can help cover funeral and burial expenses, pay off debts, and even your mortgages. But here's what I really want you to consider. It can provide income for your loved ones to build wealth with. You see, estate planning, on the other hand, can help ensure that your assets are distributed according to your wishes after your death, and that your loved ones are taken care of. If you truly love, and I mean this, if you truly, truly love your loved ones, don't leave their financial security at chance. I want you to get life insurance today. You can get a free quote with my friends over at Ethos by visiting anthonyoneal.com/life insurance or by clicking the link in today's show notes. Protect your family's future and give yourself peace of mind. Don't be in heaven and you're full of joy and your family is here on earth struggling and stressed. Get life insurance today with my friends over at Ethos. Hey, now let's get back to today's show. I know it's a good one.
So you better take what we've been talking about these last several weeks. It was everything that I would need to start the cupcake collection, which is the business he gave me at 3:17 in the morning.
Wow.
I would get up, get to my Bible, bring a pen, and I had a journal book. And the journal book was about a 5x7 journal book, something I could take with me everywhere I go, because a thought only lasts for scientifically 30 seconds unless you ink it in time.
Right.
So you have to write it down in order to not forget it. Because, you know, a lot of times you say to yourself, I'm going to remember that when I get home.
Right.
And you just don't.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
And it's, for me, it's not the same to put it in my phone.
Okay.
So I keep a pen with me and a journal from that day forward. And when God stopped awakening me, I had filled that entire journal book, even to the edges. When you close it,
right.
I had even written on the edges of the book. I keep that in a safe now. When I finished being awakened, it was all of the instructions for what the cupcake collection was going to be. The crazy thing about that was I didn't know how to bake, not even out of a box. But I was listening to this guy on the radio. His name was Dave Ramsey.
That's my guy.
And he was telling people that they could get out of debt by having a bake sale or a garage sale.
Yeah.
And we had sold everything we had to get to Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, okay, God, well, I guess it's going to be a bake sale. And I had these two daughters who were great in the kitchen. And I thought, well, we're going to do your little, you know, you guys are going to bake. What do you think about that? My oldest daughter said, okay. And my younger one was following her sister. Said, let's do it. And shortly after we got started, my oldest daughter said, I'm not really interested in your little bakery idea. I'm going back to New Orleans where we're from.
Right.
And so without her, my youngest daughter wasn't interested anymore. So here I am. God has given me all of this stuff to make this business. And he says to me, choose life, because if you don't do this, or if you turn from it to the left or to the right, anything that I've taught you to do, I'm going to take everything from you and you'll die. But if you are careful to follow everything that I've said, I will make you prosperous and successful at everything you do. And so I decided that at that point, I understood that God had basically told me he was tired of giving me things. And the thing that I've learned and I want people to know is that I was 31 at the time when this was happening. And I think a lot of times people think it's too late for them. You know, my life hadn't started. We were drowning in debt and brokenness. We were oftentimes living in that house without electricity. And I was 31 years old. Like, you expect your life has started by now. There is a return on the investment that is your life that God is expecting from you. Just like you put your money in the bank, you want a return on your investment.
Yeah.
God wants a return on the investment that he's placed in you, right? Mm-hmm. We're made in his image, so we want things that he wants.
Yeah.
And so God was tired of giving me ideas that I didn't follow through with. And so what he said to me was,
choose life, and I understood that choosing life meant not taking another idea and not following it through. And I think a lot of times we think that we're afraid to fail. But really what it was for me was I was afraid to be successful.
Wait, what?
I was afraid to be successful because getting up and being successful means I always have to show up. I don't get to sleep in. That means when I don't feel like it, I still got to come to the table,
That's right?
When I don't feel like it, I still got to produce the product. When I don't feel like it, if I don't feel good, I still got to show up. When I'm going through a divorce and losing everything I have, I still got to show up. And I got to be smiling about it. And I think that's the thing that people really are afraid of. They're not afraid to fail. You're afraid to succeed.
Because of the responsibilities that comes with success.
Yeah.
That is so good. Because you're right.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been afraid to fail. I've been afraid to succeed because I'm scared of what comes with success.
Yeah.
You know, because if you're successful, then you have more people who can see all your flaws.
Yeah.
And then you have, now you have people who expect you to show up. And now there's certain things you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, what helped you get over the fear of success, though?
I was afraid of God.
Ooh.
Like, literally, I knew that I had heard him because I was waking up every day at 3:17. And when I opened my Bible, it just falls into this book, chapter 3. I go down to verse 17 thinking there's something in that 3:17 thing.
Right, right.
And I get my first message. I was afraid that I was going to die.
Yeah.
And I think when God knocks on the door of your heart,
yeah,
and he says, I want you to let me in.
Yeah.
You better be answering.
Yeah.
And I think that was my thing. I knew that if God ordered the meal, he was responsible for the bill. And I felt like he was going to pay for it.
I like that. If God ordered the meal,
mm-hmm,
he going to pay the bill.
Yeah.
You know, as a single man, that kind of, you know, kind of stands out to me a little bit. Someone's like, hey, if I invite you on a date, I'm responsible for the bill.
Yeah. And as a single woman,
wow,
I expect him cool to pick up the
bill. Come on, mama. That's real,
yeah,
though.
So God being my father, right,
yeah,
God being the man in my life, I was expecting that if he was inviting me into this relationship to do this thing with him, in collaboration with him, he was going to take care of me.
Because if he don't take care of you, it's not just you looking bad. It's our God looking bad. And he ain't trying to look
he's
bad.
He's not doing that.
Ooh, that's good right there. Now, I like that.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good. If God says it, do it, because he going to take care of the bill.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he has shown me that he would take care of me better than any man ever has.
Ouch.
My earthly father's first responsibility was to show me my heavenly father.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
My father was a hardworking man who always was at work. He provided for his children.
Yeah.
I don't think there was anything that we ever really wanted.
Yeah.
In the earth that we couldn't have. Like, me coming to this place of understanding took me all the way around the mulberry bush to learn that about my father. But at the end, when he died, I saw his work is being done.
Wow.
And what I was left with was a heavenly father that he represented, who I could go to and say, Daddy, I need you to do this for
yeah
me. And he does it.
Yeah.
And that's the way my father was.
You know, you guys, Mignon has written a book that I really want you all to get. She's been on my show several times, and I'm pretty sure y'all have seen her go viral several times. The things that she said on my show, from the table to our Black History panel, that has over a million views. And she has a book called Made from Scratch, Finding Success Without a Recipe. It is on pre-order right now if you're watching this in the month of April, but it comes out May, in the month of May. And I want to encourage you to get this book. I've had the opportunity to read through it, and I fully endorse it. I don't know if it's going to make it on the actual book. But you know what? She is doing some amazing things, some of the best cupcakes in the entire world. I'm going to be honest with y'all. It is. I call Mignon my spiritual mama, my earthly mothers, my practical birth mother, and my other mother of every Thanksgiving and every Christmas for like the last, I want to say, 5 years mm-hmm. now. Mm-hmm. They expect her to ship them cupcakes to North Carolina and to California, even to the point to where I forgot last year. And her team called me the day before Christmas Eve. It was the 23rd. Hey, we didn't get your order in. I was like, shoot. And my mom was like, hey, did we order cupcakes? I was like, Mom, I forgot. Christmas Eve cupcakes arrived to Cali and to North Carolina. That's just how good her cupcakes are. And if her cupcakes are that good, it's because of the story and the journey of what she has gone through. And I think the spirit of just owning cupcakes. The spirit of it. And it's like you went from $5 to 5 million plus now in sales. I don't know where you are now in sales. Mm-hmm. That was years ago when you were saying 5 million.
Yeah, that was 5 million cupcakes.
Yeah.
That wasn't dollars.
Ooh.
That was 5 million cupcakes.
You took $5 and it turned into 5 million cupcakes.
Yeah.
And I like your tagline, finding success without a recipe.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people right now are relating to that. Like, how do I find success?
Yep.
You know, like, how do I do something of substance? How do I know to do what God has given me if I don't know how to?
You said
you didn't know how to do cupcakes.
I didn't know how to bake.
Now you have, I mean, it's not my opinion, y'all. I'm talking about publications. I'm talking about people who actually rate cupcakes mm-hmm. said she is number one.
Yeah.
But you didn't have the recipe.
Yeah.
You didn't know how to do it.
No.
Let's talk about that a little bit because, like, now you have several. You have a couple of stores, several people working for you. I mean, and you have freedom. We're going to talk about that because you said something to me a while ago about freedom. I just shifted my whole mindset. But how did you go from no recipe to having a strategy and recipe now? Yo, real quick, you guys, are you looking to change your career here in the year of 2023? If so, look no further than Bethel School of Technology, the only Christian online tech boot camp in the world. According to a recent report, black people make up just about 4% of the U.S. technology workforce. But you see, at Bethel Tech, who I partner with for this year, they believe that all people, including us black people, should have access to the lucrative and fulfilling opportunities in the tech industry. Now, with their 9-month program, you'll gain the essential skills you need to start a successful career in technology. And let's not forget the earning potential. You see, according to Indeed, the average salary of a software developer in the U.S. is around $103,000. Say what? You know, you can choose from programs like the cybersecurity and UI/UX design and launch your tech career or even a tech business ignited with passion and purpose. So listen, we're going to skip the debt and we're going to invest into yourself for just 9 months that can change the next 9 years of your life. All you got to do is join Bethel Tech today to achieve your career aspirations. Visit AnthonyO'Neill.com/Bethel or click the link in today's show notes today so you can register and start a new journey of your life. Now, you know what? Let's get back to the show. But this is a good one today. Let's keep it above.
Yeah, what I want people to know is that every stupid thing you've ever had to do is taking you from where you are to where you want to be. And so sometimes we think, I'm not supposed to be right here in my life. I should be further.
Yeah.
I should have accomplished something else. And you see all the people around you making it, and you're the only one that hasn't found success yet. And that was my life.
Mm.
And I had gone to Xavier University. I was on scholarship when I got pregnant. That kind of put me in a position where I had to drop out of Xavier and go do something that was going to be quicker.
Okay.
So I decided to go pick up nursing somewhere else.
Okay.
That didn't work out. And then I ended up meeting my husband.
Okay. Was the key word.
Yeah.
I want y'all to know y'all saying, was been, wait. Was husband. That's what you're saying. I got you.
I end up meeting him, and then we get married and move to another city. So I just, life picked up.
Okay.
And so, you know, when I was doing that, looking for my place, I found what I was supposed to do. I finally put down on a piece of paper what it was that I wanted to study, and it was always journalism. Mm-hmm. I had this writing fever on the inside of me. So I had gone from being a pre-med student to being a nursing student.
Okay.
I couldn't apply the science to the human body. I was flunking out of my classes. Then I end up dropping out of college to pick it up later to follow my passion, which was writing. And then I also got a degree. So I ended up graduating with a dual degree in mass media and psychology because of all the pre-work that I had done as a pre-med student. And then I picked up a passion for photography. Little did I know that God was setting me up for a business. He was going to show me 17 years from then.
Ooh.
And I became my first marketing person.
Okay.
I took all the photography that you used to see on our website.
Yeah.
I took those pictures.
Are you serious?
I was the one who laid out all of the pamphlets and things. I knew how to promote myself because I had gone to school for that. But it was in the kitchen where I was trying to figure out how to do what Dave Ramsey was telling people to do, have a bake sale.
Right.
I called my grandmother on the phone, and I say, Grandma, how do you make cake? And she goes, baby, I don't have a recipe. You know, pinch this much together, you know, get this ingredient. She was talking about ingredients that are not even in the stores anymore, you know, because she's older school, right? And so I realized something as I was trying to follow my grandmother's recipe. This is unbalanced. This is an unbalanced chemical equation. Had I been able to balance chemical equations at Xavier, I would be a doctor right now. I couldn't make it work. But it was mixing up the things and putting in the rising ingredients that I realized I could manipulate cake and make it do whatever I wanted it to do. And so I always let people know I'm really not a baker. I'm a scientist.
Ooh.
I'm a food scientist.
Yeah, yeah.
And so was actually doing chemical reactions in the kitchen 17 years later, trying to make a dollar out of 15 cents.
Yeah.
That all of the things that I had ever done came together as a recipe.
Yeah.
So now I make all of the recipes that are on our lineup.
Yeah.
We've been voted as the best cake in Tennessee.
Yeah.
We've been voted as the best cake in Louisiana.
Yeah.
And I stand as the only business that has that, the only bakery that has that ranking in more than one state, because that's the only states where my bakery exists. We also rank as one of the top 10 in the nation. Our food truck was one of the first ones introduced in Nashville.
Yeah.
And still carries a top, ranking.
It's beautiful.
Thank you. We call her Joy.
You're next to a restaurant that I used to go to, and I'll never forget when I first met you was at Dave Ramsey's office.
Mm-hmm.
And you blessed us when I was on staff there. And I'll never forget when you was on the stage, I said, I felt something in my spirit. You're supposed to be connected to her.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, how do I do this? And I'll never forget, I sent the message to you, and I was like, hey, I don't know what it is, but I want to come by the shop and get your story.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since then, I've always called you one of my spiritual mothers.
Yeah.
Because every time I get near you, in the beginning of our show, you said you want people to experience joy.
Mm-hmm.
I've learned so much from you spiritually. I experience the joy. You always have a smile on your face. You're always honest with me. You've told me some hard things about myself.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus. You know what I'm saying? When I was making the transition, you asked me some hard questions,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, this is why. But I got to tell you, that recipe, I ain't never liked vegan stuff.
Yeah.
And then when you made me try that vegan cupcake,
mm-hmm.
I couldn't tell it was vegan.
Yeah. And that's my goal. That's my goal. I want to be the best at what my wheelhouse is. I don't want to do other things. I don't need to be the best at cookies. I make some amazing cookies, but I'm not trying to sell them. I don't need to be the best at donuts. I want to find the best donut shop and eat them. Right? But I want to be the best at cake because that's my lane.
No, you're the best.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
No, I'm serious. You're the best. I mean, I order them.
Yeah.
I haven't even tried no other cupcake in any other city. I'm like, if I want cupcakes, I'm just going to call my people. Yeah. Drew, hey. I need some cupcakes. All right, bro. Where
and she's got you. We're beginning to even anticipate. Like you said, I remember going into the bakery, and it was Christmas time, and they were scrambling around. I said, does Anthony have an order? She was like, oh, let me call him right now. You know, I said, just put the order together because you know he is required to send those cupcakes.
I am coming to get them. I'm telling you that right now. You said to me a few years ago, you said one of the best ways of freedom is through ownership and entrepreneurship.
Mm-hmm.
Do you still feel that way?
Yeah. I definitely know that I can own my time. I can own my decisions.
Yeah.
Definitely one of the things that I'm also teaching the people who are on my team is about ownership. And you say, why would you say that when they work for you?
Come on, talk.
You know, for me, it's like they are in the business of their own labor.
Yes.
And so I want them to know that even Adam and Eve were required to work and to do something.
Yes.
And they can take their labor, and when they see it from that angle, they steward over it differently. And I just believe that entrepreneurship is the way to freedom. And when I look back on my history and my ancestry and the women who came before me, whose names and faces you will never see, names you will never know. You will experience them because you will know my name. And you will not forget it because I'm going to offer you the best that I have available. And the thing about it is there might be somebody watching who's a baker and who says, she ain't better than me. You know, I'm not trying to be in competition with anybody.
Come on.
I believe that collaboration is the new competition.
Yeah.
And all I'm trying to do is go into those places where we've been historically enslaved and redeem the time.
Come on.
Because my grandmother couldn't have free enterprise. My father was born on a plantation in 1947. My grandmothers couldn't have free enterprise. And so I just want to be able to be the best at living in this sugar business. Being a descendant of enslaved people from a sugar plantation. And I think that is, that's nothing but God.
You know, here's my problem. Why is it that if we strive to be the best, it means we strive to compete?
Mm-hmm.
I think all of us should strive to be the best.
Yeah.
You should strive to be the best cupcake person, which I believe, in my opinion, you are. But then you watching, you may be in the cupcake business. Strive to be the best.
Yeah.
You know, and then, hey, how do you partner together? How do we come out here and really impact people and inspire people? It doesn't have to take away from us striving to be the best. I want to be one of the best podcasters and YouTubers when it comes to bringing people financial freedom. But my brothers, Earn Your Leisure, they're killing the game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay, how do we partner together?
Yeah.
How do we help more people?
Mm-hmm.
But we're both striving to be the best.
Yeah, you look outside of the box and look for ways that you shine, that you can bring some light to the other person, right? And something my five-year-old said, he's 21 now, but, you know, when he was 5 years old, I had been working every day like it was a job for 2 years to open up this business.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that I think people forget. You see me now and you think, oh, she showed up on the scene. I was working 2 years like it was a job before my store ever even opened. This is 17 years of my life that ended me up on this table, even though it's somebody's first, you know, experience with me. My five-year-old said to me, I was driving down the street and I had been working every day. There were no cupcake shops in Nashville. And we were driving down the street and there's a big sign with give us a swirl. This cupcake place was coming.
Jiffy Lube, we care about cars. In fact, we're kind of obsessed. That's why we've been taking care of business with quick quality oil changes and service for over 40 years. And with things like our Carful Vehicle Review, where our experts will check, fill, clean, and inspect your vehicle, you'll know we'll car for your car like we car for our own. Jiffy Lube. Car more.
Visit JiffyLubeDC.com to find a Jiffy Lube service center near you.